You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Coming up, we'll continue our candidate forums with Spencer Zimmerman, a Trump conservative candidate for Wisconsin's 1st Congressional District.
First, it's time for our weekly review of state news. This week, we look at a story about a Green Bay clerk and her thoughts about opening a new polling place, the latest on teen pregnancy rates in Milwaukee, and news about Wisconsin's voucher schools.
Robert Menser is back with us again to walk us through the week's biggest stories. He's the storytelling editor for USA Today Wisconsin. Robert, welcome back.
Hi, thanks for having me back.
Well, Robert, there was news out of Green Bay this week after an email exchange between a city clerk in Green Bay and the state's election commission was made public. What happened?
So this was tied to a release of emails in an open records request by the Liberal One Wisconsin Institute, and essentially they found kind of a smoking gun. It was written up in The Nation. It was an email from the Green Bay City Clerk, Chris Teske, complaining about this request to establish an early voting site on the campus of University of Wisconsin-Green Bay. She wrote to the Wisconsin Ethics Commission to ask whether it was okay to deny this request on the grounds that students lean more toward the Democrat is the sort of killer quote. So what's interesting is she was writing the email to ask the question, is this a valid reason to deny this as an early voting location? And she's sort of asking, isn't this an unfair partisan advantage? But there's no recognition that it could be an unfair partisan advantage to Republicans if Wisconsin has city clerks looking around for ways to deny early voting based on sort of partisan calculations.
Well, right. That's what's interesting about this is that just some people have taken that and seen an attempt at suppressing the student vote, and other people have said, well, she was just trying to avoid giving any part of an edge to the other party, Republicans in this case. How do you think this ended up playing out in our hyper-political landscape right now?
Well, so it's custom made for confirmation bias. If you see voter suppression, then this is a great example. But I mean, there's some truth to it. It is important. It's probably important to complicate the picture, because it is important to say that Teske also in her email does cite actual budget and staffing concerns. She cites accessibility to the campus, to whether that would be useful as an early voting site. It's also important to say that, you know, UWGB students can go and vote early at City Hall just like anyone else. You have to go to your polling place on election day, but for early voting you can go wherever. So it's not just about partisanship that what she was talking about, but it's just that there's clearly this partisan dimension that underlies it, which is why this is a story in The Nation and why it's been talked about in political circles in Wisconsin all week.
And to finish the story, was the polling place at UW-Green Bay ever opened?
It was not. For what it's worth, the Wisconsin Ethics Commission seemed to reply to the clerk in a sort of above board way and say that you're not obligated to open a polling place here. That's not really a reason that we would give. That will be a polling place on election day. Students can are welcome to vote. We had a reporter on campus today this week talking to students about their reaction to the story, and there are a lot of people who were offended by this and said that it only increases their resolve to vote. So I think their voice will be heard.
We're moving on to some good public health news right now out of Milwaukee. The teen birth rate has dropped. Apparently in 2015, the journal Sentinel reporting that it was at a historic low for 15 to 17-year-olds. What's the latest there?
Yeah, it is probably not an overstatement to say that the decline in teen birth rates in the last, couple decades is one of the biggest and clearest public health gains of the century, and maybe longer than that. So this is, we have new data in Milwaukee. The Journal Sentinel reported on an announcement the city's health department made today, which is historically low birth rate among girls aged 15 to 17 years old. The city's teen birth rate since 2006 has declined 65%. It was almost 24 girls out of every 1,000 had a baby between the ages of 15 to 17. Today, it is down to 18 out of 1,000. The birth rate has gone down among all ethnicities, and the movement's been relatively consistent through the years. There's some movement, but it's been fairly steady in the way that there's no reason to think that these new numbers are in any way an outlier. They seem to be part of a larger trend.
So 65% drop since 2006, that's really significant when you look at that. And you have to ask, is there a reason? Do we have a handle on why the rate has dropped so much? What's working?
So, again, this is true in Milwaukee. It's also true across the nation. And so as with any large trend, it's got to be overdetermined. There's got to be multiple contributing factors. What we know is that abortion rates have not gone up during this same time. In fact, there are fewer abortions today than there have been in decades. So it isn't that. It seems to be some combination of effective use of birth control. Emergency contraception use is up. That is a factor. And effective education campaigns. It seems crazy, but one factor that some actual social scientists point to was the popularity a few years ago of the MTV reality show Teen Mom. You talk about the Teen Mom effect. That was a show that depicted some of the actual realities of being a high school student who has a kid. And there's a thought that's in the mix as one factor among others, it showed this sort of unromantic reality of what that's like, and maybe that got through to some kids.
We're talking with Robert Menser right now from USA Today Wisconsin. We're recapping the biggest stories out of Wisconsin this week, and we're going to switch over to education now. So there's been news this week about Wisconsin's voucher schools, Robert, and in short, spending on state voucher schools is the program in general is expected to go up in the next year. What kind of growth are we talking about?
Yeah, significant. Wisconsin will spend $245 million on private school vouchers for this school year, 2016-2017. That is an increase of $15 million from last year. This reflects enrollment increases in Racine as well as in the statewide voucher program, which was set up to each year to allow a few more students to increase up to a certain cap. The cap increases and in fact, enrollment has followed that cap. It amounts to a little less than 34,000 students statewide, and so this is an increase.
Are there particular parts of Wisconsin where voucher schools are growing more quickly than in others?
Well, so the Wisconsin has a weird system. It always, in Milwaukee and Racine, they always have had a different type of program than what the rest of the statewide voucher program, which is relatively recent in sort of the Walker era. The Milwaukee program is actually one of the oldest, it might be the oldest school voucher program in the U.S. And so these are the places where there's the most just raw numbers of students getting vouchers, and also there's been a lot of growth there. The idea, of course, is that the purpose of a voucher in the premise of it is that you give a parents a choice among schools, and that there might be some private charter schools might be able to pioneer some different teaching methods. They might be able to scale up and improve sort of overall education levels. And then, of course, it amounts to a very controversial program because people say it undermines public schools to take these students as well as, of course, these funds.
And what has this meant for public schools that might be affected?
Well, so, I mean, I think there are a lot of public school administrators who would like to have a piece of that $245 million that the state is spending on vouchers for their own districts, especially given tight budgets, and we're seeing all over the state put referendum pushes in local school districts. It's not so clear, because in fact there have been gains in public schools as well, and it's not really been the case that vouchers have outperformed public schools. That is, the studies on this are complex and they point in some different directions, but overall it's not it just has never happened that that these private schools receiving vouchers consistently perform better. That's just not the case. But I think for sure there's a sense that that for every voucher something's taken away from public schools. At least that's that side of the argument.
And Rob, just briefly as we wrap up, looking to the future, what do you see for this tension point on funding between voucher schools and public schools here in Wisconsin?
Well, the statewide program continues to go up. It increases the statewide cap for each year for 10 years, and then there is no cap. We're a few years into that. That path seems to be set. At the same time, lawmakers are gearing up to work on the next state budget and have already said that providing more funding for public education is going to be a priority. I think it's very likely that K-12 education gets some more funding in the next state budget. So it's really a question of whether it's perceived as sufficient, whether it's perceived as taking the pressure off local communities that need to do referendums so they have less need to do that, or if that pressure still exists, if that friction still exists, then I would assume that school vouchers, some resentment about the funds that are spent there will continue as well.
Robert, thanks a lot for joining us again.
Thank you.
That was Robert Menser, storytelling editor for USA Today Wisconsin. He joined us there to recap the biggest stories out of Wisconsin this week.